Argument in our next two cases this morning has been waived, and so we'll take those two cases on the briefs. They are U.S. versus Austin, 12-3175, and Almay versus Kickard School Bus Line, 13-1273. So we'll move on to the sixth case of this morning, which is United States versus Whitler, case number 12-2756. Ms. Sullivan.
May it please the Court, my name is Lauren Weil Solomon, and I represent Mr. Whitler in this matter. He was the defendant in this case. This case basically involves the application of an enhancement for a firearm under the drug guideline, and because the district court erred when it applied the enhancement, we request that the case be the sentence be vacated and the case remanded to the district court for resentencing.
How much of a difference did it make in the range?
The lower range would have been 70 to 87 months, and the higher range was 90 to 108 months. So there's a difference. If you took the middle of the guideline range, it's essentially 10 months, or it's almost 2 years if you looked at it from the lower end to the higher end.
Okay.
This case involved a lengthy, contested evidentiary hearing about two issues, both the drug quantity and the applicability of the firearm and enhancement. And there was one witness that was a cooperating, it was a co-defendant who was cooperating against the defendant. He was higher up, and he was the supplier, and he was cooperating down. The first allegation of the appearance of a firearm in the record is a letter that resulted from a briefing session with the cooperating witness 2 weeks prior to the evidentiary hearing. Prior to that time, the government had been proceeding on the fake airsoft guns that had been discovered at the defendant's apartment at the time of his arrest 2 years after the events and a year after the events that were underlying this case. And because the district court found and other district courts found that this cooperating witness was unreliable and that his testimony with regard to the drug quantity was not believable, that the belated evidence with regard to the his testimony with regard to the firearm also was unreliable. Was unreliable. It did not possess the indicia of reliability that's required to enhance a sentence or to be accepted as evidence under at a sentencing hearing. And for that reason, that the district court erred when she applied.
I misunderstood then. I thought what the judge said was that because of the skepticism she had about Jones' reliability, that she would only she would look to see if there's other corroboration for what he would say, and then look to the transcripts of the several phone conversations in which she understood a gun was being mentioned.
That's correct. A gun was mentioned in the telephone conversations, but nothing corroborated the gun incident that Mr. Jones testified to with regard to
where he's shown the gun and he held the gun
at an unknown time and during the course of the conspiracy. And that's the evidence that came belatedly that had never been revealed before. And so while there's statements about guns, it's our position that merely talking about a gun and a telephone conversation during the course of a conspiracy would not be sufficient to apply the gun enhancements, gun enhancement under the sentencing guidelines.
It wouldn't.
It would not. There's no case that
a judge couldn't find that information sufficient to show by a preponderance there was a gun involved.
Well, it wouldn't fit within the rationale of the guideline. That is, the rationale for the enhancement is the belief that the possession of a gun during the course of a drug event is makes it more dangerous.
A gun has to actually be recovered for a judge to utilize that enhancement?
Well, there are cases that have shown, an out-of-circuit case said that it was sufficient if there was a gun holster that was recovered at the time of arrest.
That's
with
sighting. Circumstantial evidence that there was a gun, I guess, right?
That's correct, and that was within close proximity to the time when the firearm had actually been seen, observed during the course of a drug transaction. There is no case that says that a mere conversation about a gun during a conspiracy, we're not talking about during a particular event, but during the course of a conspiracy, would be sufficient to find the gun enhancement.
And so what case or guideline says that's not enough?
Well, there's no case that says either way.
So it should be this case, I guess. Right?
That's right. We're talking about what's the floor. And there, in my research, there is no case that has this floor. And so that would be our position, that it's just not enough.
Well, let's sort of collect what there is that the district court relied on here. Did the district court rely on Jones's testimony to the extent it was corroborated, or did she just rely on the evidence from the recorded phone call about the burglary at the defendant's home?
To
clarify what the basis for the decision was.
Well, certainly there was a testimony that he saw a gun.
But the court said that's not reliable on its own,
but
she credited it because of the corroboration.
Of the two phone calls.
Right, and the phone call had to do with, or the one that she gave the most weight had to do with the description, the defendant describing the burglary at his house.
That's correct.
Where the robbers took video games and a scale.
And TV.
TV. But not the banger.
That's correct.
That was right there in the same vicinity. So why isn't that enough? And then we've got the subsequent recorded phone call where there's a reference to trying to find something, and more ambiguous. But
that certainly is more ambiguous because it was in the context of a cousin who had been shot, and they're talking about finding if the cooperating witness knew about a gun for the cousin. So, yes, the more troubling conversation is the one that talks about the robbery.
Right.
And so then the question would be, would that be enough without this, belated testimony about, oh, yeah, now I remember 3 years later, yeah, I did see it, and it was, during this transaction. So would be our position again that would not in and of itself be sufficient. Those weren't seen by the cooperating witness.
You agree preponderance is the standard.
I understand, yes, that preponderance is the standard. But there has to that
and
has
it
to
be
have
proven circumstantially, right? I mean, you don't have to have direct evidence of the presence of the gun or the possession of the gun, I guess it is, right?
That's correct. However, preponderance doesn't mean nothing. Preponderance doesn't mean just a statement. It would be our position that just a statement alone on a telephone conversation would not be sufficient. Just as a statement about another crime without any supporting evidence in a telephone conversation couldn't then be used to enhance Mr. Whitler's sentence at the district court because he said something during a telephone conversation. My time's up. I would like to reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
Mr. Edenfield?
Good May it please the Court, my name is Scott Edenfield, arguing today on behalf of the government. The district court did not commit clear error in this case when it assigned a two-level enhancement for use of a dangerous weapon. The evidence in this case, both the testimony of Robert Jones, as corroborated by the two phone calls in this case, that August 7th and the August 29th, 2009 phone call, the government established by its burden of preponderance of the evidence that a firearm was possessed in connection with this offense. And I'd like to talk about the testimony of Mr. Jones. Robert Jones testified that he delivered crack to Mr. Whitler at the residence. He also testified that he picked up proceeds from Mr. Whitler at that residence. He then testified that at some point prior to the August 7th, 2009 phone call, Mr. Whitler showed Mr. Jones a gun at that residence. He proceeded to describe that gun, and as the court noted a little while ago, the court stated that it was not relying just upon Mr. Jones' testimony, but was also looking to Mr. Jones' testimony as corroborated by those two phone calls. And the August 7th, 2009 phone call being the most important of those, which clearly established that the money, guns, and a scale were located at that residence. That coupled with the fact that Mr. Jones had previously testified about delivering crack cocaine and picking up proceeds from that residence establishes that the gun was located at the same location as drug paraphernalia, money, and drugs themselves. The August 29, 2009 phone call further establishes that Mr. Whitler possessed the firearm during the course of the offense when he's talking to his cousin about whether he can obtain a firearm and how he could obtain that firearm. So, Your Honor, we would submit that the district court did not commit clear error in the sentence and would ask this court to affirm the sentence as imposed by the district court.
So what is the floor? What's the minimum the government has to show to get this firearm enhancement?
Your Honor, the government has to show by a preponderance of the evidence that the gun was possessed by the defendant, and it could do that in a number of ways. It could do it circumstantially. It could do it by seizing the gun. It could do it by statements of the defendant. And in this case, it was done by statements of the defendant that were recorded as well as corroborated testimony of the cooperating witness in this case.
So with a statement alone, a single phone call in a long conspiracy, that would be sufficient?
Your Honor, if there was a corroborated phone call in which a gun was discussed and that phone call were clear that there was a gun in the residence where drugs were sold.
What's a corroborated phone call?
And you're right, Your Honor, to a corroborated phone call is if the phone call established that was with the defendant stated, I have a gun in my apartment, and the other evidence indicated that the drugs were sold or processed or proceeds were stored at that apartment, that the government would submit that that would be above the floor, Your Honor. And in this case, we have not only the statement in the recorded call, but also Mr. Jones' observation of the gun, establishing that the gun was there during the time period of the conspiracy.
Now, of course, Jones is aware of the phone calls being recorded.
Your Honor, those were Title III intercepts, so at that point in time, Mr. Jones was not aware that those phone calls.
I understand that. So it was intercepted from both of them then?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. It was a Title III intercept, so neither individual was aware.
I wasn't clear on that.
And Jones was the target of the call, not Whitler?
That is correct. Mr. Robert Jones was the target of the Title III intercept.
The tap, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
At what point did he cooperate then? It was after his arrest, obviously.
That is correct. Mr. Jones started cooperating after his arrest and approximately towards the end of what's the charged conspiracy in Mr. Whitler's case of June to October 2009.
Obviously, that call could be used against Jones as well.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Is this sort of at the outer limits of what's necessary to support the application of this enhancement?
Your Honor, I don't believe this case is at the outer limits of what can be used to support this enhancement, because in this case we have multiple phone calls talking about the gun.
Two.
Yes, Your Honor, two phone calls talking about the gun. And we have the testimony of Mr. Jones about the gun. And he stated pretty closely after his arrest in October of 2009 that he had seen Mr. Whitler with a gun. So I don't believe that this case is at the outer bounds, but it's certainly above the floor that the court has discussed previously. So again, we would ask that the court affirm the sentence as imposed by the district court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Solomon, you've got a minute left.
Just a couple of points. There was no quantification of money. We have no idea what he meant by money. It could have been a dollar. There is no information in the record below about any quantity of money.
You mean what was stolen, what he was referring to?
That was in the apartment.
Okay.
With respect to the prior statements, Mr. Jones had two prior briefings with the government agents and grand jury testimony, and he never said anything about a gun at a particular time. During his arrest and during his statements, he went back and forth about his own possession of guns, claiming that he never had a gun. At the sentencing hearing, he said he never had a gun, and then he said he had a gun, and then he said, well, no, he didn't have a gun at that time. So all of his testimony with regard to guns, with regard to himself, with Mr. Whitler, and with other co-defendants he cooperated against were ambiguous. So I would argue that the statements in this case and the evidence in this case were insufficient to support the enhancement. Request that the case be vacated for resentencing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. Ms. Solomon, were you appointed on this case? All right. You have the thanks of the court for your representation of your client.